Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Today we have David Brown joining us. David is an entrepreneur specializing in technology and the media industries. He specialized particularly in transforming cutting-edge technologies into audio and video content, and is the founder and creative director of Future Hand Media and producer and host of a number of podcasts, including With AI FM, which explores the profound impact of AI across various different industries. So welcome, David. Nice to have you.
Good morning.
David's already been giving us some tips around microphones and things like that, which we desperately need. So we really appreciate him being here to critique our setup. No, please. We very much
welcome
it.
I can't help myself.
I mean, we need it. We need it. So we always start every episode by asking what your work weird work moment of the week was. So Dan, why don't you kick us off today?
Sure. So mine has to be the fact that today we've launched season two, and it may just sound really corny, but I'm just pinching myself every single moment. It's just mind-blowing, and I'm really not only proud, but just, yeah, it's become really clear after our two-week season break that how much I've like missed it, even though we've been doing so much work in the background. The fact that it's live and it's out there is amazing. And at this point of season two, we've already booked the final guest of season two as well, so it's just surreal. Oh, really surreal, but surreal, weird, and wonderful. What's yours, Alice?
Mine is also podcast related. I went out to dinner with some friends last night, and I think, you know, we sort of started this podcast thinking we hope somebody listens, but actually it's ultimately about us and our desire to scratch our various itches related to work and what we're interested in. And so we didn't really think much about who would be listening to it, if anyone would be listening to it. We're quite happy if anyone listens to it, to be quite honest. But last night I went out to dinner with a friend, and she is someone who's very particular about the media that she consumes. She actually walked out in the middle of the Barbie movie saying this is stupid. She won't tolerate anything that takes up time that she doesn't deem worthy of her time. And she'd listened to every single episode. So I felt like there was some sort of victory in that. And obviously, I also feel that there's now a level of scrutiny that we maybe need to live up to. So yes, now every time we do an episode, I'll be thinking of her and whether or not this will meet her exacting standards, which is a good place to be, I think. What about you, David?
That's nice. I work alone, so I don't really have too many weird moments, I hope. Maybe other people might have weird moments with me, but I do have one that was recent, which might lead into to a bit of the conversation we have later. But recently I met a young lady who was working, you know, as a starting off as sort of a part-time position with a lady that runs a recruiting company that I know. And the weirdest thing was, is that she's like, has a 1980s work ethic. Like, she's on the ball. She gets in, she comes in early. She said she's like very diligent at her work. She doesn't complain. She, you know, if you send her an email at 10 o'clock at night, she answers it. So very, very not typical for, you know, what most people would say, you know, sort of 20, 21 year old, you know, people in work at the minute, the sort of the way they behave. But at the same time, she still has that kind of millennial or whatever it is now, you know, whatever generation they're calling the 20 year olds now. So she does want some work-life balance, but she still is quite happy to like just dig in and get stuff done. And I found that hugely refreshing and frankly a bit weird.
Yeah. Yeah. We're actually, we have an interview coming up with somebody who is a 22-year-old CEO who's going to talk to us about how Generation Z or Z, apparently it's Z. You Brits are saying Z, and I would have said Z, but anyway.
Gen Z, yeah.
Yeah. How they're kind of misunderstood. So yeah, that will be an interesting topic to explore a bit more. We also asked the question of how are you where you thought you'd be at in your career at this point, and why or why not?
If you go back to when I was sort of coming out of high school at like, you know, 17, 18 years old, before I even thought about going to uni, and this is truth, I literally didn't think I would make it past 35. So I had no plan about where I was going to be in my 50s because I literally just didn't even think that I would make it that far.
You mean in life? Like
in life, yeah. Okay. I just figured I would have done something stupid and killed myself by this point. That's the God's honest truth. And I never had a plan. I grew up in an environment where my grandfather had his own business, my uncle had his own business, my dad had his own businesses. And it was always a very entrepreneurial family setting. And I started off working for the family businesses when I was really young. And then early in my career, I got into the travel business. And so for nearly 10 years, I guess, or well, 7 or 8 years, I worked in the travel industry. And I worked mainly for big companies like American Express and Thomas Cook. Now, these were in the days before the internet. So you couldn't go on and book your own travel. You had to call a travel agent. And so, you know, I was in Dallas at the time, actually in Arlington, working for American Express and Thomas Cook. And they had these massive offices with like 300 people on the floor, you know, and we just sat and took calls, you know, from, I don't know, Apple or whatever, you know, would have an arrangement, or HP would be a big customer. So anytime their people had to travel, they had to call us. And I only got into tech later, but in the mid 90s, I moved into working for startups. And I've literally worked for startup companies ever since the mid 90s. And if you had asked me, you know, when I was younger, would I be running a media company, you know, doing podcasts? Like, podcasts didn't even exist. So let's think of it as radio or TV, one or the other, depending on how you want to view it. If you had asked me back then, I would have said no way, because I was never encouraged to explore my creative side, right? I came from a very conservative, you know, sort of Southern background in America. I'm from Memphis originally. And it was all very, you know, either working class, like you go out and you get a job working a trade, or you like go into business and, you become a banker or something like that. And it's, you know, it's all very conservative, short hair, you know. And So that's a really long answer, but we're here to chat, I guess. That's a really long answer to say no. I would have never predicted that I would be here now.
So obviously, when you look at your bio, there are a whole variety of different things that you do. What is it that you spend most of your days doing right now?
Admin.
Aren't you supposed to be the AI expert? Isn't that supposed to be taking some of that off of you?
Honestly, all I ever do is admin. because I'm a one man band right now, admin business is about 80% admin at the end of the day. So it's project planning. It's, you know, for my different podcasts that I do, I mean, like you said, I have with AIFM than I do. I have 6 other hosts on that platform that hosts different topics within the realm of AI. So we talk about creativity, we talk about women in AI, we talk about education, we talk about the law, we talk about place, which is like smart city type stuff, we talk about startups, we talk all these different topics within the sort of business realm. So there's, and you will know this just as much, as guest management takes a huge amount of time. So trying to organize and find good guests to talk to, and then organize their schedules and make sure they're onboarded and all that sort of stuff. Then there's the production of the show. So I do all the editing. I do all the video and audio editing and all the everything that goes with that. And then I do have somebody that helps me with the social media posting and stuff like that, so I don't have to do too much of that these days. And then I have my own podcast called My Crazy Uncle Dave's Podcast, which I do just because I did the AI one. And that is really narrowly focused on, you know, discussions about AI and AI's impact on business and that sort of thing. I wanted to do something different that was a bit fun, because I wanted to talk about a bunch of, basically, I wanted to get on and rant about things and they just weren't related to AI. So that's what my other part, that's my personal outlet to go and just talk about crazy, you know, stuff. And that's fun. But again, that's the same thing, right? I generally have guests on, so I have to do guest organization and management and all that. So there's all that sort of stuff. And then at the same time, because I'm not busy enough, I help a couple of startup companies try and, you know, sort of get business with what they're working on. And then I'm also opening a video studio as well. So I'll have a studio open in the next probably 4 to 6 weeks, and we'll actually be able to, it'll be a content studio here in Tunbridge Wells. So just a couple of things.
Yeah, sounds like you've got your hands in lots of pies. So what is it that you love about podcasting? Why is that a medium that excites you?
I think the thing with podcasting, and I don't know if you'll agree with this, but I think the best thing about podcasting really, and why people engage with it so much, is it's unfiltered. And I think what happened is in broadcast media, whether that's radio or TV or whatever, I think everybody, you know, that reached its peak in what, the mid-90s kind of thing. And I think everybody then, with as the internet started to become more popular and really became part of everybody's everyday life, this even before mobile phones, right? Like mobile phones, that just accelerated it off the chart. But even before that, you know, the whole point of the internet was for people to be able to share information freely. And then, you know, to see what the knock-on effect of that was. And I think even in the mid-90s and the late 90s, as the internet was really starting to grow, what we started to see is that people started to realize how actually controlled the media was and how controlled the messages were. So, you know, you'd have a broadcast channel and they had advertisers, and the newspaper have advertisers, and they won't run certain content because they know the advertisers don't want it run. And so even though technically there's no censorship, that's the word I'm looking for, technically, you know, legally there isn't censorship. In practice, there is censorship because these are all private companies. They don't want to upset their sponsors, so they don't say certain things and whatever. And I think people started to realize that. And then as podcasting became available, the cost of running a podcast came down. Like, you could never do this in the 80s. This, running a show like this would cost you, you know, $100,000 a year, probably, you know, for the video, even for the video. Yeah, I mean,
spoiler alert, this does not cost $100,000 a year.
No, yes. Phone does 4K.
Yeah.
60p, right? 10 or 15 years ago, that was a $40,000 film camera.
Hmm.
Just think about that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have so much power in our hands now that that's opened up that whole thing. So now, anybody with an opinion, and we can talk about whether this is good or not, but anyone with an opinion now can get out and can start presenting content. And sure, there's tons of people like me who know very little about a lot of things, but love to have an opinion about stuff and just talk about it. But there's also some very good, you know, journalists, professional journalists who do really good work, who now aren't constrained by the rules of their sponsors. Mm-hmm. And so they can actually go out and cover things and say things and talk about topics that they wouldn't be able to otherwise. And I think that's the real exciting bit about podcasting. And I think, you know, for the big professional broadcasters, that's one thing. I think for smaller businesses, it's a huge opportunity to really let people get to know you a little bit and to understand what your business is about. And, you know, I assume we're going to talk about this, and this is going to come up maybe in this conversation, but, you know, a big part of Gen Z and the millennials is in their working is, you know, it's value-based companies. So they pay a lot more attention to what the values of the company are. So if your company has good values and you talk about it openly on social media and, you know, through your content, and if you've got a blog, you know, a podcast or a YouTube channel, that sort of thing, then you can say to them, well, hey, come and work for us. And look, you can see our values. Go listen to us. We talk about this stuff all the time. So I think, you know, from a business perspective, it makes sense. From a personal perspective, I just think it's fun. And I want to talk to people like you and, you know, and my guests that I have on, because I want to learn and I want to talk to people who are experts in their field, and I want to get their opinions on stuff, and I just want to learn from them. And, you know, you start off small and then hopefully you know, work your way up. Like, I had Daniel Bedingfield on. I don't know if you guys know who Daniel Bedingfield is. but he was a sort of a pop star back in the early 2000s. And I met him at the AI Summit, was able to do an hour-long interview with him, which was really interesting to get his sort of thoughts on AI in the music industry. And it turns out he uses AI all the time, and he uses it for ideation. So he doesn't use it to make his music, but it uses it to give him and to test ideas to see if that kind of is a road that he even wants to go down. So, yeah, I don't know. It's fun learning stuff, and it's fun talking to people. And I have a list of like A-list people that I'd really like to talk to, you know, and someday hopefully I'll get there.
Who would be the ideal, the ultimate guest for you?
For me?
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to Jordan Peterson.
Okay, interesting.
100%. I want to talk, and I want to talk to JP because I have a real thing, and this is related to AI, so it's sort of topical for the listeners as well. But I think there's a really interesting discussion to be had that no one is talking about yet, which is, what is the psychological impact of humans not being the smartest thing?
Hmm.
And how is that going to impact people on a I don't want to say proactive, personal, sorry. How does that affect people on a personal level, right? You now knowing that, because for forever, as far as we can remember, humans have been, you know, pretty much at the top of the food chain, brain-wise and intelligence-wise. We're no longer the top of the food chain. And so I think there's going to be a long-term social impact that's going to come with that psychologically. And because he was, you know, has been a practicing clinical psychologist for decades, I think it'd be, I think he would have some really interesting thoughts on that. And he hasn't talked about that with anyone else. So if anybody knows JP, or if JP ever listens to this, please reach out to me, because I'd love to have a conversation about it.
Slide into our DMs, please. Yeah. We'd all really appreciate it.
Anyway, there we go.
That's really interesting. I think just a couple of things from what you just said. One is that there was quite a lot of coverage after the U.S. election around this really being the podcast election, right? Because it did provide that authentic glimpse into the candidates that maybe didn't exist before. And arguably, Trump took greater advantage of that opportunity than his
17 hours. I think it was 17 hours total. So I'm a big Daniel Priestley fan, and he really presents big on this, on the key person of influence, you know, right, content that he produces. And it talks about all the elections that one was radio focused, like Obama was all the social media campaign, all of that. And this was that access. And I think that, what to your point earlier, this is what businesses and corporations need to do now, because Gen Z don't trust brands. They more trust people. So it's got to be from a business perspective, employee generated content from the bottom up, and you've got to personalize your leadership and make leadership not, you know, be in a glass box and untouchable and never visible, but just putting them on that level. And I think my question was, as you were talking, because I'm not concerned that we've started the podcast, are we too late, you know, because it's, podcasts have boomed, but are they going to continue? What's your thoughts on the future of podcasts? Is it going to continue to grow? And no doubt there'll be another channel coming some point that we don't even know about yet, but what is the longevity of podcasting?
I think podcasting is changing at the minute. And, you know, I mean, you guys host your own show. You probably read a lot of the stuff that comes out and, you know, the stories about the industry in general. I think podcasting very much in the early days, and a lot of people would argue that podcasting strictly still is audio only. I think what we're seeing in the statistics, though, is that the larger podcasts are going video as well. So what's happening, interestingly, is it's now circling back around to what I said before. So you've now got these big shows, which are run by professional broadcasters using professional producers and cameras and that sort of thing. They're now pushing out shows they're calling podcasts, in air quotes, and they're doing video. So what they're doing is they're making TV shows, and they're putting TV shows on YouTube, and they're pushing them out on Spotify and everywhere else. And what that means is that those smaller podcasts like us, we now have to try and keep up with that, because there are only a certain amount of hours in the day that people can listen to shows. And so we have to try and capture attention. So it means we're now back in the grind of trying to spend more money for better production and that sort of thing. And then that becomes expensive. So then we have to get a sponsor. And then our sponsor says, oh, but we don't want you to talk about adult stuff, or we don't want you to mention this thing, or you can't talk about our competitor. And now you're back in the same spot that the broadcasters were in the beginning. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. Unfortunately, that would be so good. So I don't know. I think, you know, things are going video. I do think that the people who do video are going to really have to up their game. And that's what I'm seeing across my shows. We used to do video. When I very first started, I said, we used Riverside, which is the platform we're using now, and it records video and audio. And I did, my very first show was audio first, but I said, I record the video and I just whack it up on YouTube in case anybody wants to watch it. But, you know, no guarantee of quality. It's literally just the feed. And I didn't really do much with it. Bit of color grading, but, you know, I'd always fix up the sound and whatever and put that out. And then I went through a period where I was like, okay, well, everybody's doing video, so I'm going to go more video first and focus on the YouTube stuff, and then I'll still put the audio out. But I spent more time on video. And then what I realized, that you can see, and then I went through a period where I was like, okay, this is all well and good. I can control the video on my side, but because I have a remote show most of the time, I can't control anybody else's. I can't control their video. I can't control their audio. And it's not the quality that I want to have on the channel, because I can't compete with the big shows, right? With that, where they have a studio, you know, and everything is set and they have a controlled, even Joe Rogan, right? You look at Joe Rogan and it's, I mean, like him or not, he has the number one or number two podcast in the world and has done for like, what, 8 years or something? So you have to pay attention to that as a podcaster. But it's literally him sitting at a table with, you know, three cameras. You got a wide shot and you've got two individual shots on the guest and on him. And, you know, and it's 3 hours long. And, you know, it's simple, but when you look at the list of the kit, if you dig into it, it is professional broadcast quality equipment, you know, that the small people have trouble competing with. So, so yeah, I'm torn, I guess, mm-hmm. is the short answer. If you want to clip, I'm torn as to which way it's going to go. I do think we're going to have to do more video to go along with the podcast. But I think if we stick to audio only, then we can be a lot more open and free in the things that we talk about, because it's not so expensive.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I just think, you know, as an enthusiastic podcast listener for many years, there is something different about seeing it on video, seeing people's faces and the kind of animation in there. And, you know, you do get more from that. But on the flip side, I often listen to podcasts in the car or when I'm walking the dog, or places where I don't actually want to sit and watch something. So I do think it feels like there's still some space for that as well. So what inspired you to start the With AI platform?
Great question. So ChatGPT came out in November of 22. You can believe it. It was actually that long ago. And by February 23, there were freelancers in my office who were already losing work because of AI. And it started off with copywriters, because obviously text was the easiest thing, you know, for the GPT systems to do. And literally two people, well, one lady lost $3,000 a month in freelance revenue. So she lost all of her revenue straight away by February. And then another lady lost about half of her business as well. And I was in an office that was set up for creatives, and it's like part sponsored by the council or whatever. So it's cheaper, so we could afford it. And it's all we ever talked about in the office when we were making coffee at lunchtime on the balcony in the back after work. Like it's all we talked about. And I just thought, I listened to podcasts. Podcasts sound like a bit of fun. Why don't we just take these conversations and just record them? Because we can't be the only people talking about this, and particularly around the creative businesses. I come from a data analytics background, you know, ever since I've been in the UK 25 years now, for probably, you know, I would say at least 12 of those years, I worked in data and data analytics. And so the term AI that a lot of companies use isn't actually AI. It's what's called machine learning, which is just a slightly, it's a different thing, but it doesn't have that. It's not like a GPT, which has that chat element to it. So there are tons of companies now who say they're AI companies, which they aren't AI. They're just using machine learning algorithms to make decisions in the background. And that's been going for 30 years. And websites and businesses have done that for ages. That's not anything new. They're just calling it that because it sounds sexy and they want people to think they're doing AI. And so, yeah, this was a whole different animal, really. And I just saw, you know, very early in the day, this was going to go after, you know, video producers. It's going to go after video editors, audio editors. Like now, you don't need to do anything. You can go to Adobe, and I shouldn't say this as someone who produces podcasts and likes to charge money for it, but if you want to fix your sound, just go to podcast.adobe.com, and there's like a tool you can just use, and you just put your audio file in there, upload it. I don't know, there's probably a fee to do. I don't know if it's free. I'm on like the full Adobe thing, so I get access to it anyway. But you just put your audio file in there, wait 5 minutes, and it comes back, and it sounds better than 90% of the humans that do it. You know, so all this stuff is new. You know, you can now go, again, I don't want it to sound like I'm advertising for myself, but I did a chat about James Bond, the new, you know, because now Amazon has total control of the James Bond franchise and all that. I don't know how much you keep up with that kind of stuff, but this was massive, massive news, you know, within the film industry. And we used AI to create a new Bond theme song. It's amazing. It's so good. Honestly, you create something like that, and then you just, you know, and it takes a couple of iterations to get what you want. So you can't always use the first, you know, sort of prompt that you want. But then you listen to it and you're like, this could actually be a Bond theme.
Yeah. Bad news.
And it was created with AI in about 10 minutes for zero money.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And so that was the key motivation, was I wanted to be, you know, and this is 2023 now, early 2023. And I wanted to be sort of the canary in the coal mine to just say, hey, we really need to start talking about this now, because in 10 years, the industry is going to be unrecognizable across all aspects of everything, the law, education. I mean, all the stuff that's happening in those areas. Look at warfare, combat. That's changed permanently forever. Like, they have jets now that have no human pilots in them, and they're better than humans.
So given your perspective on all things AI over the last number of years as you've been doing these podcasts, are you in camp utopia or camp dystopia?
That's a really tough question, actually. I'm not going to go middle of the road, because that's the lame answer. I think I waver on a daily basis back and forth. I think some days I see how the tools are amazing and they can enable people to do so much more. And just it, I think it allows people who maybe never thought that they were creative to express some creativity. And I think that's amazing. People like me, I mean, I'm the perfect example. And so from that perspective, I think it's really interesting for people on a personal level. On a professional level, this is like the Armageddon, and people have no idea what's coming. No idea. You know, you've got companies like Meta and Google and stuff who are not hiring engineers anymore. And if they are, they're hiring very, very few. You have another company I've read recently, I can't remember which one it is. It's not Anthropic, but it's another one. You may know this, but they basically have said to every new candidate that wants to apply for a job, you have to write them and explain why AI can't do your job better than you. That's your cover letter, basically. You've got, you know, companies in San Francisco and Silicon Valley, you know, putting up the billboard saying stop hiring humans, hire AI. I think it's not, the AI at the minute is not exactly, you know, good enough. It's not that it's not good enough. It's not, it doesn't have enough functionality in it to function like a human yet. So the agentic stuff, so it acting as an agent kind of independently and doing tasks on its own, that's something that's still in its infancy and is coming. And as soon as that really works well, knowledge work for humans is over. And I know everybody says, yeah, but you know, we've always found other jobs for people to go into, an industrial revolution and yada, yada, yada. No. The industrial revolution, what happened in the industrial revolution is people went from doing manual labor to knowledge work. Nothing's ever come for the knowledge workers before. The way I always say it is no one's ever come for the smart people, right? Like the technology's always come for manual labor and, you know, factory jobs and assembly work and that sort of thing. And they've, you know, they've built robots that can do that very efficiently. But all those people, all those jobs that were displaced went into office work, working for digital marketing companies and creating shitty ads for the internet and, you know, social media posts and all that kind of stuff. That as a, that whole level of knowledge work is going to go. It is. It's going to go. And it's going to be, I had to put a date on it. I would say probably in the next 10 to 15 years, you're going to see an enormous change in the way work happens and how many people work. And I think that is an apocalypse that's coming. Because businesses will, if you own a business, you absolutely have a legal responsibility to make as much money for the shareholders for that business as possible. Because if you don't, they can take you to court and they can sue you if you make decisions that are against the interest of the business. And I think this is something that a lot of people who don't run businesses don't understand. And so your fiduciary duty is to the shareholders, not to the employees and not to the customers. So as soon as something like AI becomes available, and they say, well, you can replace this person with AI and it costs, well, a thousandth of the cost of a human being, then as a, you have to make that decision as a business. So until they pass something like, I don't know, maybe you treat AI as an employee or something, and then you have to tax the use of AI. Because otherwise, when you don't hire people, then there's this whole knock-on effect of taxes. So where does the tax revenue come from? Because the person's not doing it. The AI is doing the work of 1,000 people. So that's 1,000 people's tax, you know, bill and national insurance and Social Security and all the other stuff that they're not getting anymore. So, you know, that then has a knock-on effect on the government. And it's just going to be like a set of dominoes coming. And then you've got people just sitting around. They can't get work. They're unhappy. And then we know what happens when humans get bored. They fight.
Yeah. We were going through the Discovery interview yesterday with somebody who was saying about the amount of people that are unemployed of a certain age group. So Gen Z. So that is a million. That's a lot. And this apocalypse is coming. And I think Alice and I have had that moment. And for the simple folk like me, what do you think then? What is going to happen for the, I'm a marketer. Like I'm looking at my job thinking, right, they're not going to meet. And what does that then mean for my kids? What are we going to do? But starting with, you know, a mid-career person, what do you think is next? What should we be looking at doing? Starting a podcast?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're automating those at the minute, fully automating those. I mean, you can 100% automate an entire podcast now using Google LM. Or notebook LM. I'll get the name right in a minute. Google Notebook LM.
What is that? Sorry, I've got no idea.
So if you have a Google Workspace account, you have it by default. You can just log into it, and it's a research tool. And what you do is you can take a topic like, I don't know, the aerodynamics of African swallows. And you can literally take, and you can, if anybody gets that reference, well done. You can literally take like PDFs, you can take web pages, you can take all sorts of stuff, Google search results and everything. You put it in and you say, here's the topic I want to you to research. It will then go away and it will create a summary of that, but it will also create a 15-minute podcast with two voices, so two co-hosts that will summarize and talk about that topic for you. So literally, you can put hundreds of pages of research in there and it will create a 15-20-minute podcast that you can just listen to that gives you a summary of everything that's in all that documentation.
But if we then circle back to
in
the initial discussion around authenticity and the fact that the podcasts are popular because they are human beings speaking unfiltered to other human beings, obviously that is not that. I guess I'm always wondering, you know, we're not very good at being humans, I don't think. We're very good at being machines because we are driven by productivity targets and things like that. Efficiency targets, we're asked by organizations to do our work faster, you know, using less, fewer resources all the time. That's what we've been asked to do as a corporate employee for decades. We now realize that actually we can outsource all of that productivity and efficiency to machines, which are far better at doing it than we are, for obvious reasons, where they're not fallible and we are. They also can work all night. They don't need to sleep. They don't need to eat. They don't need to rest. They don't need to take mental health breaks. They don't need any kind of human connection. They're just fine functioning in the background. And then it makes me think, well, then why are we not focused on the aspects that make us genuinely human? Things like ethics, critical thinking, human connection, that sort of thing. And I, just going back to your example of needing to justify your existence within an organization based on what you can do better than a machine, is that where we should be focusing our efforts in terms of developing our skills?
I think so. And to finish on Dan's question, because I think it all feeds in together. But I think people like us who are mid-career at the minute are probably okay. We will be able to work out the rest of our careers. Who's really going to suffer are the people coming through, because you don't need to hire a junior person at the minute, right? AI is quite capable of doing a junior person's role in pretty much any knowledge work right now. And it will take the same amount of effort for you as a mid-level person to train the AI as it would take for you to train a junior-level person, right? So what we're doing is we're training the AI now instead of training people. And then you get governments who come in and they put things like they raise national insurance, like this is in the UK. But, you know, as they raise the taxes on businesses, now the businesses can't afford to hire, because of cash flow, they can't afford to hire that new person that they were going to hire, because the budget for that now has to go for taxes for the people that they already employ. So it's even more incentive now to look at AI instead. So you start giving it to your current employees and saying, hey, use this to make your job more efficient, blah, 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 right? So that's what you're talking about. What that means, though, is that that next generation of kids has nowhere, that, not that they don't have anywhere to go. It's just that those jobs that we talked about and we told them when they were really young that they were going to be able to do,
won't be there.
They're not going to be able to do because they're not available.
Yeah.
So what do you focus on? That then becomes the question. And I have a 17-year-old son who's just doing his A-level. So if anybody in the U.S. is listening, that's like he's getting out of high school, let's call it. And, you know, he's got a very different workplace outlook and what he's, you know, kind of able to do now as opposed to when we went to school. You guys are much younger than me, but still same situation. And what's really interesting with a lot of the kids, particularly the boys in his school, so he goes to a Catholic, you know, kind of nearly, it's not a private school, but it nearly. A lot of the boys in there are talking about they don't want to go to uni because they don't see building up student loans and everything to go and study for degrees that basically in 10, 15 years aren't going to be there anyway. And they're looking more at doing apprenticeships and doing more type trade work, or, you know, something that's a bit more kind of manual.
Practical.
And I still think that that's for the next 20 years, we're going to go, humans are going to go back to doing manual jobs. So pure thinking jobs like accounting, it's going to all go AI. Bookkeeping, AI. All that stuff is going to be digital. Banking is all going digital. Cash isn't really used much anymore. So all transactions are online somewhere. All of that can now be done by automated routines, whether it's machine learning or AI. All that kind of stuff. Looking at marketing, Dan, thinking about what you were talking about. I mean, I'm working with some guys at the minute and I'm editing some videos and I've done some interviews with a company that literally has set up a tool that is it's an AI CRM, basically, so your customer management system. And it will do everything from take leads that come in on the website or answer phone calls. So if you have a business, like let's say you run a salon and you know you have people call in to make appointments or whatever, it'll just answer the phone and talk to people and take their appointments. It'll answer their questions. It can, like, they can say, oh, what, you know, what kind of shampoos do you have? And they'd be like, oh, we've got this and this and this, and this costs that much. Would you like to get it? I can, you know, like, it's literally like talking to a human nearly, but it will answer and do all that stuff. So if you've got a salon, I'm just going to stick with this example. You got a salon owner, you know, he's in the middle of doing a hair dye and he's got all the dye on his hands and the, you know, person in the chair and the phone's ringing and he can't answer it at the minute. So he might miss that appointment and they'll call someone else. Well, now his AI answers it, makes the appointment, sends the follow-up email, sends the text message, sends the reminder the day before to remind them to come to their appointment, can tell them anything that they need to do, can, you know, reschedule if they need to reschedule it. It creates all his social media content. It creates all his lead generation. It creates all his pipeline reporting. Like, it does everything. This platform literally will, like, can do everything end to end. Now, you, Dan, as a marketer, is it going to be as good as you as a professional person working in marketing? No. But is it going to be better than the salon owner could probably do themselves? Yes. So for them, it's still a step forward, even though it's not perfect and it's not as good as a human could do yet. But that's coming over time. And the more that platform gets used, the more it gets trained by everybody that's on it and the better it gets. And then in the next 5 or 6 years, it's going to be unrecognizable. You'll call, you'll speak to something, you'll have no idea whether it's a human or not. It won't sound, you know, the response times will be much more natural like a human being, and you'll have no way of knowing. So we're back to where does that leave us? Well, that leaves us with being plumbers. And, you know, electricians and stylists, you know, running a salon. But any of that stuff that you need a physical dexterity to do, humans are going to be pushed back into doing those human dexterity jobs because robotics is not anywhere near, no matter what people say, and they all go, oh, the robots are going to come take the jobs. No, they're not. The robots are 20 years away from taking jobs easily. They're way too expensive, but the biggest thing is that they're not reliable. So the maintenance costs of the robots and stuff is way too high for them to be used in any practical way at the minute. And people I know who run robotics companies say that we're 20 years away.
Although that doesn't sound like
that. We're back to doing manual labor jobs and service.
Yeah.
Which is going to leave then a gap in things like higher education, universities, people not choosing to not go there through the cost element, and there's no need for the jobs, which is then going to create, it's still sounding like there's going to be this unemployment, like real big challenge, which is then going to create loneliness and friction and tension and all of those things. And that's going to be it's quite scary. It's very scary for people.
It is. Yeah. And I know, you know, everybody says, oh, yeah, we'll just, you know, this is the typical tech bro answer, which is, we'll figure it out. Don't worry about that. Never mind the man behind the curtain. We're just going to keep going, you know. And I think, you know, if we haven't learned anything from social media, it will be a shame. But, you know, there's a lot of unintended consequences are going to come out of this. And we don't even have the foggiest idea of what that's going to be. But again, I suspect that there's going to be a really interesting impact on the psychology of humans as humans are no longer the smartest thing. And I don't know what that's going to do. But yeah, I mean, personally, that, like I said before, and honestly, I'm being serious about this. I see mass social unrest because I think if humans given too much time to sit around and be bored, they come up with all sorts of crazy ideas and then they just end up fighting because at the end of the day, we're tribal and we still haven't got past that. And so the tribes will just start fighting because they don't have anything else to do.
Yeah, I think I'm maybe more of an optimist. So I will offer an alternative view. I think we're in a bit of a strange technology halfway house, or at least have been for the last 20 years, where actually we almost have the worst of all worlds, right? Because we are still in that place where we see the value of brand human being our intelligence. And actually, that is something that has very much divided societies in terms of whether or not you can pursue higher education and so on and so forth. And arguably, it's that this sort of class warfare has been the driving feature behind a lot of the political unrest that we see today, right? So I think for starters, we can start to unpick that a little bit and gray the difference between white and blue collar at the very least. But I think also, you know, we've put ourselves in this position where, especially accelerated by COVID, where we're slave to technology in ways that are actually ruining what makes us human. So we are hurting the things like our spirituality, our well-being, our connection with nature, our connection with people, our sense of community. All of these things have been eroded by our relationship with technology to date. And so this idea that actually around the corner becomes some level of liberation from this, where actually we can return to some of those things, we have the time, the capacity, and the reduced focus on our need to be productive and intelligent, it can actually start to reconnect with some of those things that are tribal in a different sense, are tribal in so much as they are connected to people and land and our surroundings and our community. So maybe there is some element of this, which will ultimately, maybe it will take a couple of generations and maybe a lot of people will die, starve, etc. in the meantime, but who knows, maybe there is a future that looks like this, that maybe is on, you know, Mars or wherever, whatever planet we end up colonizing.
But there has to be hope. Like you know, there's the financial crash in the early 2000s, you know, there was this mass rise in entrepreneurialism again, and people doing their own startups and creatives. Like I don't know. Yes, it's scary, but we'll drown in our own self-pity, won't we, unless we start to think there's going to be hope. But I'm with you. Have we gone so far down? And I love what you said, David, about haven't we learned anything from social media, that yeah, this social media has almost driven loneliness because we're glued to our phones and we've got this FOMO, you know, all of this stuff, and we're addicted to it because of the dopamine spike. Like, but we know we're doing it. Like, you know, we know we're all trapped in it. Is it then going to actually drive for more meaningful connection in a way? I don't doubt what you're saying. Like, I can absolutely see what you're saying happening, but I'd just like to think that there's some hope in people that makes us drive for better, and drive for more, you know, to get those meaningful connections back. I don't think we're going back to a world where we all leave our front doors open, you know, and we play on the street in front. Like, it's not going to be that, but yeah. There's got to be some hope, otherwise we'll be really sad.
Well, yeah, again though, and I think a lot of, look, we're not the only ones having these discussions, right? But we've got to keep this conversation at the forefront, and we've got to keep bringing it up and just making sure that people are thinking about this. The one sort of interesting twist, I guess, to all this is we're at a point where we're talking about, you know, jobs are going to become more scarce, maybe at least those knowledge, that knowledge work is going to become, you know, there are going to be fewer humans doing it. There will always be humans doing it. The example I give is, you know, if you want handmade shoes, you can still buy handmade shoes, right? Like, there are professionals and artisans who still make handmade shoes. All shoes used to be handmade at some point, and then machinery came in and industrial revolution came in. And then, you know, now we have all this stuff that's mass made, but you can still go get an artist to make a custom pair of shoes for you. You can still go on Savile Row in London and you can get a handmade, hand-measured suit made for you, and shirts and everything. It's just super expensive. And, you know, they are artisans and they're artists in their own right. And I think we will end up with that. There will be a 10% at the very top or a 5% at the very top who, you know, are very interested in those fields. They will, you know, there'll still be human accountants, there'll still be human marketing people, but they will be very rare and they'll be extremely expensive because, you know, they are the experts in that field. Now, how you get from being a kid in university to becoming an expert in the future, I don't know, because that traditional path that we all went through doesn't exist anymore. So I don't know how that plays out, but there will still be human experts and we will still need them. So I don't think that's terrible. The little twist that's in there is that as these jobs go away, what we're seeing in most places around the world is a massive fall in birth rate. So oddly, what we've got is a reduction in jobs in the next 20 years, but we've also got a reduction in people in the next 20 years. So maybe those two are going to kind of drift down at the same rate. And if they do, then in effect, what you see is you've got the same employment percentage, just in fewer jobs. So from a statistical view, and we all know about statistics, right? There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. But statistically, you'll probably see that there won't be much change. And everybody will go, oh, see, that it was no big deal. Everything's fine. AI didn't have any impact. But if you compare the total number of jobs and the total population, they both fell at the same time. So weirdly, I'm not really worried about this. You know, they talk about population collapse. I'm not worried about the population collapse because I think there's a jobs collapse at the same time. And all that's going to drift down, hopefully around the same rate. And then it's everything's just going to shrink a little bit, which again, I think probably isn't a bad thing for the planet because then you've got knock-on effects of the environmental impact and everything else. So now you've got fewer humans on the planet and do you know what I mean? And all the knock-on effects of that. And so we could be in just a shrinking of everything at the minute, which again, I think probably wouldn't be a bad thing globally.
Yeah, it's the way people, it's the way the marketers spin the message, right?
But that's what's happening.
Yes.
Right. And, you know, if you sit and think about it for a few minutes and, you know, have a glass of wine and you go, yeah, actually that kind of makes sense. Maybe that's what's going to happen. There will be a massive, Alice, like you said, there will be a massively uncomfortable period getting there. You know, I'm X generation and, you know, we had the baby boomers on one side, which was the largest generation at the time. That was by far the largest generation that we'd ever seen. They had very few kids. So X Gen is the smallest generation, like for ages. And then X Gen had a lot of kids. And so Gen, what is that? Millennials. I guess. And there was is almost as big, if not bigger, than the baby boomer generation. So X generation in the middle is we're being squeezed politically because we don't have as many votes as either side of us have and things. And this is why you're starting to see a lot of pressure on things like pensions and Social Security in the US and all sorts of stuff, because there's many fewer of us that have been paying into the system that are trying to support this really large generation behind us and also the one that's following, because we should be paying in theory, we're paying in our taxes to support the people that come after us. But because that generation is bigger than ours, that creates a bit of a problem. So in the short term, it's going to be very uncomfortable. But I think in the longer term, again, that falling birth rate doesn't worry me so much because I think everything will start to sort itself out.
So I'll just leave that on a positive note. Thank you so much, David. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do so?
Just find me on LinkedIn. Is probably the best way. I mean, again, I have, you know, the With AI FM podcast, so you can, you know, reach out through that in the comments, or my Crazy Uncle Dave's podcast. You can reach out to me there or at Future Hand Media or Orion Studios. Future Hand is literally Future Hand, all written together, .co.uk. And Orion Studios is Orion Studios.uk. those are the places. So yeah, just reach out through any of those.
Great. Thank you so much. It was a very far-reaching conversation. Very invigorating.
Thank you.
For a Wednesday morning. So thank you so much.
Cheers.
And thank you to everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have any Work is Weird moments to share, please find us on LinkedIn and let us know what they were. In the meantime, have a wonderfully weird week, and we look forward to seeing you next time.